Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast from Middays with Susie Larson. Enjoy the conversation. It's only just a matter of welcome to Middays. I'm Susie Larson. So honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, many of you know who have walked with me a long time. You know I contracted Lyme disease in my 20s as a young mom, which really was quite the battle for me. And then some of you may know that my husband, Kevin, was diagnosed with cancer in his 30s. So for us as a young couple to be hit so hard with two significant health battles, it was so jarring. Kev always says it's something he would never wish on his worst enemy, something he never wants to go through again, but something he wouldn't trade for the world. I'll tell you, those experiences radically changed how we show up in life. And one of the verses we return to time and time again is this one, Psalm 90:12. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. You know, to number your days, it's to recognize and acknowledge their worth, that they're a gift. It's to literally appoint the day for a purpose. And oftentimes I'll slip out onto my knees right when I get out of bed and I number the day. Lord, this is a gift from you. I don't know what it all holds, but help me be faithful. I'm second, you are first, and I submit to your rule and reign. Lead me and guide me. It's so good to understand that tomorrow's not promised, but we have today. And you'll gain a heart of wisdom when you cherish the gift of today. Well, my guest today has served as a major ministry leader. Then he was diagnosed with cancer. And he writes, "My pre-cancer life was pell-mell, so much in a hurry to charge the next hill. I sadly missed thousands, maybe millions of special moments. And now, when I'm taken aback by the autumn glow of a tree, I pause to capture the moment in a photo so I can enjoy it now and anew later. When a puppy walks by, I bend down to ruffle its fur. When two driving routes are options, I often take the slower one, the more scenic one." Alec Hill joins me today to talk about his book, Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, New Purpose. I'm telling you what, finding new purpose. We've got 6 copies of this book. If you've never been hit by cancer, that's a surprise just because of the stats. But I will say, even if you're, don't tune out if you haven't, because the book is about redeeming the days and understanding that we don't have the kind of control we think we do, but there's something powerful about living in just under the wing of the Lord, of the Most High, trusting Him and following His lead. Alec Hill's book, again, 6 copies of Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding a New Purpose. If you're new to Faith Radio, this is how you get in the drawing. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. A quick announcement before we hear from Alec. We are giving away 1 Tony Evans study Bible each week. Dr. Tony Evans is just we air his programming. We love his leadership. So we're super excited about this. You can enter to win as many times as you want. 1 Bible a week, the Dr. Tony Evans study Bible. You can enter to win on our website at myfaithradio.com. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Alec Hill is President Emeritus of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA. He's written for the Huffington Post, Christianity Today, the Aspen Institute, as well as other publications. He's the author of Just Business, Christian Ethics in the Marketplace, and the book we're talking about today, Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. He and his wife, Mary, live in the Seattle area, and we're so grateful to have him on the show today. Alec, so nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Susie, my pleasure.
Looking forward to this conversation. I told you off the air, this is a fantastic book. I can't wait to dig into it. But we love starting out by talking scripture. Have you been pondering any passages these days?
Yeah, so I'm working my way through Jeremiah, and Jeremiah had a rough life. I mean, he had to speak truth to a group of people that didn't want to hear it. And the passage that stuck out to me was his lament of how alone he felt. And I'm just pondering that over the last couple of days.
Well, say more if you would.
Well, I just think that sometimes as we apply that to our lives, we are called to speak hard truth to culture, to family members, and there's a price that we pay for that. And I think Jeremiah is sort of a forerunner, sort of a symbol of Christ in the Old Testament, in that he was the suffering prophet. And I am such a coward, I'm a people pleaser, that Jeremiah is a challenge to my status quo, I'll put it that way.
Wow. Thank you. That's exactly why I asked this question. That's fantastic. Well, if you would, Alec, give us a picture of your life before cancer.
Yeah, so I am. I was just a very healthy, happy guy. A wife, two kids. I was a dean of a business school, and then became president of InterVarsity when I was 48. There were ups and downs, but it was mostly up and good. And I felt God was leading me. I felt His presence. But I look back now, and I realize how, dare I use the word, immature I was in some of my views and attitudes.
Hmm. You wrote about this, and I'd say my hubby and I learned about it as well. But when you're wired for leadership, when you have a high capacity to manage much, the achievement drive can be strong in you until it's dismantled. You know what I'm saying? Where you don't lead with it anymore. But say a word, if you would, about just, you know, even though you loved God, there was fruit in your ministry, there was probably a strong drive in you as well.
Yeah, and I think that drive can be good. I mean, Apostle Paul was a type A, highly driven person. Now, Timothy wasn't, probably, but Paul was. And so, and David was, and God has to do a lot of work on people like us to make us serviceable.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's so much care. So he loves the fire and the drive and the energy and the passion that we have, but he doesn't like the pride, the sense of over-control, the sense of achievement being the most important thing. And we love our platforms. And so those are the things that need to be sandpapered off. And I was abundant. I had a lot of that in my life. I still probably do. I think less so now.
Yeah. Wow. Talk about how you received your diagnosis.
Yeah. So there were two cancers. The first one was 7 hours of surgery at Mayo. And that was a big one, but it was minor compared to the second one, which happened in 2015. I was opening a refrigerator door. I fainted. I blew it off. I didn't tell my wife. And a week later, I was talking to my pastor, and he said, "Always tell your spouse and never self-diagnose." So if radio, if folks out there hear this, never self-diagnose and always tell your spouse. So I had to go home and tell my wife, and one test led to another, and I came in, and they had done a bone marrow biopsy where they popped some bone out of your back. It's a painful procedure, and I was expecting bad news, and the doctor gave me the title of this horrible cancer. It's Latin, and I said, "Is it as bad as leukemia?" And he said, "No, it's worse." And I said, "How can it be worse than leukemia?" And then he explained that the only option I had was a bone marrow transplant, which was a 50% chance. And of the 50% who live, they live a year, at least a year. So that wasn't very encouraging either. And of those 30%, you know, kind of limp along, and only 20% of the 100% really live kind of lives again. And obviously I'm now in that category, but the news was so bad, that it just, the elevator kept going down. Mm-hmm. And my wife compares it to peeling an onion. And you get one piece of bad news, and then it's another piece of bad news, and then it's another piece. So we were all holding hands and crying, and thought I was going to die.
Hmm. And you go into detail in the book. I mean, you're able to just sort of kind of skim over it now because you're just synopsizing. But it you suffered a lot, and I would love for you, if you don't mind, talk a bit more, if you would, about not only the physical battle but the mental and the emotional battle that always accompanies these kinds of illnesses.
So they gave me about as much chemo in 5 days as a typical person gets in a year, because they wanted to kill every single one of my white cells. So I had 23 days with zero white cell count, which is pretty much defined as death. And during that time, chemo brain hit hard. I was getting steroids and all sorts of, my body was reacting between diarrhea and constipation, which wasn't much fun when you're losing 20 pounds. And so I had some of the typical chemo, and then I got full body radiation, which was a whack in terms of skin peeling off my body and scabs. Mm. And they basically, the saying is, we have to burn down the house to kill the rats, and the rats being my cancer. So it's a very harsh treatment. It followed. So 40 days, I didn't know if I'd live or die. Another bone marrow biopsy, and they said, it's grafting. Your brother's cells are working. But I was then a year in isolation. So I had a very weak immune system. And so all my childhood shots had been wiped out. So I couldn't go out in public. So I had 4 months at the cancer hospital and 8 months at home, what we called house arrest, where we couldn't invite people in.
Talk about the fear, the emotional aspect of this battle.
You know, it's really a paradox. It's a paradox of pain and presence. On the one hand, I felt great pain, and I felt initial fear of death. But as I came to grapple with it, I grew remarkably, really, just calm, in a sense that I thought the Lord was preparing me for death. I didn't mention that they had moved me from moderate risk to high risk because I had chromosome 3 damage, which is very rare, and it's chemo resistant. So I moved in this high-risk cancer to a higher risk. So I felt like the Lord was just preparing a pathway for me to heaven, and I moved into this place, even though I was sicker than a dog, of just trusting and being relaxed. And it was bizarre if it weren't so real. I mean, it's counterintuitive. You wouldn't expect to have that much peace in the middle of that much pain, but I did.
We're going to pause here when we come back. I mean, you did it around that point of the book. You talked about one of the things you feared almost the most was a dark night of the soul, that amidst the battle, that you wouldn't feel God's presence. And so you asked him to confirm his presence. So on the other side, I'd like you to just talk about how God confirmed his presence in your life. And I'm talking to Alec Hill, his book, Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. And I do feel like this book is even bigger than the cancer message. It really is about knowing, you know, really battling the illusion of control, thinking there's formulas to how we can live our life to get out of crisis-free cards, you know. And then really to find Jesus right in the midst of it. He's an ever-present help in times of trouble. We've got 6 copies. You want in on the drawing? Just text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute.
It's life for the show.
He's always making a way where there is no way. Thanks for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Alec Hill. His book is titled Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. He's president emeritus of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA. And in the book, Alec, you talked about, you know, here you've been given this grave diagnosis of a very rare cancer, worse than leukemia. Chances are not good. The sickness you had to endure, because they always say that the treatment is worse than the disease at times. One of the things going into this you feared was a dark night of the soul, that you would sense God's absence. And so you asked God, would you confirm your presence in this place? How did he do that?
Well, it happened in the Minneapolis airport, where nearby where you are. I was flying from Madison, Wisconsin to Seattle to get a second opinion, and no one knew but immediate family members. And I received an email from one of my mentees, and she wrote, "Greetings, Alec. I don't know what you're facing this morning." I'll get emotional here. I was praying at 9:20 and felt the Lord say to remind you, "Fear not, I'm with you." So be encouraged, Lord's with you. And she didn't know that I was sick, and she also didn't know that Isaiah 43 was sort of my sustaining verse, which is, "Do not fear when you pass through the waters, when you go through the fire. I'm with you, I'm Lord your God." It's almost the same kind of language. So I felt like that was a moment. And I wept. I mean, I've been doing it now, but I was standing in this side part of the airport, and I just said, "Lord, thank you." And then it continued. The name of my the person who did the bone marrow biopsy, his name was Grace, and she was a believer. And this is in secular Seattle, and the guy helping her, Dennis, was a Pentecostal part-time pastor. And it went on and on. God just kept putting. So by the time I got the transplant, I was feeling like God was a step ahead of me. It wasn't just with me. He was a step ahead of me preparing the way.
Wow.
And it was truly a remarkable experience. And that's the confusion. Lord, why am I going through this? But at the same time, you're going through it with me. And you're behind me, you're ahead of me, you're around me, according to St. Patrick. And I don't understand how that works, but this is pretty amazing stuff.
Wow. Yeah, you talk about in the book the temptation to ask why me, and I had to read this part of your book twice. You write that in between your 2 cancer diagnoses, your daughter was shot in the head during a botched mugging. I mean, I gasped when I read that. So first tell us what happened, but then speak to the why me question.
That was harder than my cancer. So we get this call My eldest daughter's in panic because the younger daughter had been shot. And so we got on a plane and flew down from Seattle to San Francisco where it happened. Thankfully, the bullet went across the back of her head and took off. There's a groove, permanent groove in the back of her skull, but the bullet never penetrated. But she almost bled out. She lost 20% of her blood right there on the site. And so, you know, when we ask questions about why me, we can ask why her or why my spouse or, you know, why someone I love. And these are mysteries of free will in a fallen world and how it all works. And in the chapter, I lay out three streams of explanations for why bad things happen. But then I say at the end, in a fallen world, we simply can't harmonize these things. And there's an element of mystery to all of this.
Indeed, there is. You know, we're going through a Bible, one-year Bible program right now. It happened to be in the story of Job. And it's such a reminder, Alec, not to make formulas around suffering. We have a tendency to go there so fast. And, you know, while it's true we can bring some form of suffering upon ourselves through bad choices, you should never, never, never assume people who suffer have done this to themselves.
Oh.
So speak to that
it would. It is so cruel because what happens, you get cancer, and then people look at you as if, A, you did something wrong to get it, or worse, B, you don't have enough faith to get rid of it.
These are
people who are suffering. And I had a personal sample where I was a week before the transplant, and I was weak, and I was at a funeral, of all things, and I was sitting down because I couldn't get up. And a couple came up to me and basically said, if you believe God, you wouldn't go through with this procedure. Mm. And almost implying that if I went through with it, I didn't have enough faith. And I just felt like I kept going deeper into the hole. It wasn't just the physical pain at that point. It was the psychological brick they had just put on my back.
That's right.
And as Christians, we are there to be comforts to people who are suffering, not Job's comforters, as you know. And we are to rally around people. And I felt like these folks really did me harm.
I speak against this kind of often on the show. I mean, I had those same kinds of things spoken to me as a young mom. And I still, at that point, this is so many, 30 years ago, whatever, I was still fairly new in my faith, but it was devastating to me to hear them say, you wouldn't be going through this if you had more faith. And I remember just recently a high-level ministry couple who'd lost their daughter, someone walked up to them and said that she'd still be alive today. And if she, it's spiritual abuse. You cannot do that to people. And it's, you're presuming you know so much. So I'm done with my rant. But that's so painful. And I just think people who suffer, and I wonder, Alec, do we do that because we want to distance ourselves from the suffering, going, if I can figure out why you brought this on yourself, I can avoid it. I don't have to enter into your suffering, and I can actually assess it, which keeps me out of it. I mean, what do you think about that?
I actually don't know. I don't know. Jesus, when the building fell, there's a building kills a bunch of people, and Jesus said it wasn't their sins. And this man, another story, this man wasn't born blind. Read the scriptures, right? I mean, suffering happens to people who are good, and when none of us are truly good morally, but I mean, who are decent people, and it's not a result of a direct link to their personal sin. It's, again, we live in this crazy fallen world where bad things happen to all people, and
That's right.
What the Oxford professor said. He said, you know, when he lost his three kids, he said, I don't ask why me, I ask why not me. I mean, we are not immune to the pain around us, and it affects all of us. And the truth is, unless the Lord comes first, we will all die. I mean, I've had this resurrection in my life, but I'm going to die. I'll die again. And so, you know, this is kind of a one-way ticket in terms of out of this life eventually. And we tend to forget that when we talk. And God does heal. I mean, I'm healed. I'm here. And why did he heal me and not the neighbor next door in the cancer housing? I don't know. I simply don't know.
We've got a few minutes to our heartbreak at the bottom, but I want to talk, you know, you even, which again, my brother-in-law who passed away, my hubby who's battled cancer, me who's dealt with things, you're going to ask, what is there anything that I did to open up my health to this? And you asked the same question. And there is some wisdom in going, you know, am I doing something that, am I eating something or exposing myself to a chemical? I should look at that. But it's dangerous to think that we have more control than we do. So speak to that if you would.
Well, I have a chapter on the illusion of control, and I talk about Steve Jobs, who at age 48 was diagnosed with cancer and was told he had to have surgery immediately, waited 9 months to try his own home remedies, including diet. And by the time he got the surgery, it was too late, and he died at age 55. He limped along for a while. But I think Steve Jobs would still be alive today at 65. So I relate to him because when I was going through my cancer treatments, I'm a lawyer, and I kept asking the nurses and the doctors questions. Eventually, they just told me to shut up. They said, you know, you're not a part of the crew here. You're a passenger on the cancer boat, and you better recognize your role. So I had to take my hand off the wheel. I had to recognize that I was dependent on others. And, you know, it was a remarkably good journey for me as someone who loves to control things.
Wow. So that's kind of control overreach. But you also say there's such thing as a control underreach. What does that mean?
Yeah, that means, and this is not my problem, but for some people, they're so beaten up by the pain. It doesn't have to be cancer. It could be life. It could be all sorts of illnesses or ailments or divorce. It could just be that they go passive. And you see this in dogs who get so limp that they get kicked and they don't react. And so this under control is when we lose our sense of agency, our sense of dignity, our sense of God-given who we are, our identity. And that's the opposite extreme. So in the middle of these two extremes is appropriate control. And we can talk more about that, but just to avoid over control and under control, those are both bad places.
Now I'm looking, I've got about a minute left. Would you say a bit more about what you learned about appropriate control?
Yeah, so appropriate control means that we do have responsibility. Look at Genesis 1 and 2. We are responsible, we are stewards, we are responsible for our kids and our jobs. But at the same time, we realize that we only control maybe 20% of the things that go on around us, and we come into every day with our hands open, and we don't control the future, we don't control our crabby boss, but we do have a God that we can go to, a Heavenly Father, and we turn over things to Him that we can't control. And it's that appropriate balance between what we do control and we're called to control, and what we can't control we give to God and we trust.
Well, then I would imagine, well, I know that you had to guard your mind and guard your heart from catastrophizing, from thinking the worst. I mean, maybe on the other side we'll talk about spiritual disciplines, but I'd love for you to think a bit more about that. What was your part and what was God's part? And I know we've got listeners tuning in who deal with chronic health issues and can lose the fight really fast. So what is our part? What is God's part? We're going to pause here. I'm talking to Alec Hill. He's President Emeritus of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA. He was diagnosed twice with two rare forms of cancer apart from each other, but two incredibly rare forms, and the second one just about took him out, and they expected it could have. But here he is today, and his title of his book is Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. And again, you don't have to walk through cancer to get something out of this message, because when you walk through hardship, you come out the other side. Oftentimes, you've got a different set of priorities, a new perspective. That's what we're talking about today. We've got 6 copies of Living in Bonus Time. Text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. For tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Alec Hill. He's President Emeritus of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship USA. He was diagnosed not once but twice with two rare forms of cancer, almost took his life. This book is titled Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. We've got 6 copies to give away. So much wisdom from experience, from times in the Valley of the Shadow. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. So before the break, we were talking about control overreach, where you have this sense that you're more in control of your life than you think you are, and maybe it's before you've been broken. And oftentimes, I would say an indicator of that control overreach is when you see others suffer, you assume they brought it upon themselves. But as you talked about, Alec, control underreach, it reminds me of the man on the mat for 38 years where Jesus says, do you want to get well? Where there's this passivity, and because he says, I can't. You know, you just get so identified with your circumstance, you lose all sense of hope and expectancy. So talk about this appropriate measure of our part and God's part when you are in a significant battle?
Yeah, it's hard. And I don't want, again, not formulaic, as you and I keep saying, but I think it starts with humility, a sense of saying, Lord, you are God and I am not. And suffering, in a sense, shows us the reality of who we are. But it also leads us then to trust. And I just feel for people who are suffering without God. I'm amazed how they do it. I found that when I was broken, that I was moved to this place of dependency, and he met me, and I wasn't alone. So I think there's this element of trust and saying, Lord, I don't understand what I'm going through, but I know you're with me. And then there's, in my case at least, a surprising form of gratitude that comes even in the midst of it. And again, these are paradoxes that just go on and on. Anyway, so I think finding the spiritual disciplines of solitude and rest and listening. And I do want to speak just for a moment to caregivers, because caregivers carry such a burden, and sometimes life doesn't get back to normal. And they need to follow the same sort of practices of getting themselves space and time, because they're not superhumans. So I think appropriate control is a sense of, okay, I'm a human being, I'm broken, I'm trying my best. God, fill in the pieces around me and let me find my place, but I can't do it all.
Oh, that's really good. This dear listener who battles some significant chronic health issues says, I wonder if Alec felt God's presence when he described the ways God revealed that he was with him and going before him, or was it more of a rational realization from watching those things? So did you kind of deduce it based on all the ways he provided, or did you actually really sense and feel his presence?
You know, the two initial phases of the cancers, I felt a touch of abandonment, and I think, but it didn't last very long, but I felt like, Lord, where are you? You know, what's happening here? My world's falling apart. And then because of the spiritual disciplines in my life of having, you know, every morning I try to spend an hour with him, and then I go for walks and I journal and I take retreats. And, you know, so I got back into the rhythms of my life with him, and then that dissipated. And then came this sense of calmness, which passed understanding. Mm-hmm. But I think there are phases of abandonment, denial, loneliness, sadness. All those things come into play. And it's one of the things in the book I try to say is, if you go straight to the wonder of living and all the good things, then you miss the really. I mean, the story is, this is real pain. We don't dodge the lightning bolts.
Yeah. Talk about when and how you started to turn a corner where you thought, because you'd said before the last break that you, because of the sense of God's presence, you really felt sure that he was preparing you for death. When did you kind of start to take a turn where you realized, actually, he's preparing me for life? What happened?
Well, medically speaking, at 23 days after transplant, my white cell counts showed up again. Most people have between 4 and 11,000. And I think on the first day I showed 23, but there were white cells. And so that was a step. And then at 40 days with the bone marrow biopsy, the doctors that came in, they said, you have a 90% chance of living, Mr. Hill. Your brother's cells are grafting. And it's still very emotional because, you know, my wife and I, we've gotten nothing but really bad news from doctors. And we're holding hands, and in comes the white coat. Very nice doctor, good oncologist. But he's clinical, right? He has to be, because he delivers bad news all the time. And really, at that moment, we had no idea how this was going to go, good or bad.
Wow.
So it was like, okay, you got the life card, and now you can go on with your life. And then what followed that, again, I mentioned earlier, was 4 months of staying there at the cancer housing, and then 8 months of isolation. But did know it, let me say this. So what happened then was that about 6 months after so 40 days passed, and I was sort of healing up a bit, getting a bit strong, starting to walk again. And at 6 months, I had this sense of survivor's guilt, where all of the memories of the people who had lived in my floor, who had died, and the people in my cohort, my trial. And that surprised me, because I thought, here I am, I'm living, I should be the happiest person on earth. I'm around. And then I started grieving for my friends, and I got depressed. And the question was, why me once again? Why am I still here? you know, and they're not. That was hard. That was really hard.
Wow. You write this: after being hit by the existential slap of cancer, many of us regret the amount of chronos we wasted prior to the diagnosis, and I'll let you explain that. But we can't go back. We are different people now. The good news is that we have been given future chronos. This presents us with the opportunity to redeem time, listen to this, in at least four ways. First, we learn to savor each moment. Second, we focus more on relationships and less on achievements. Third, we clean up our messes and find greater freedom. Finally, having received so much help from others, we slingshot this goodwill ahead to the benefit of others. Say more if you would. I mean, unpack that a bit more. There's so much there.
Yeah. Well, Greek has, I'm not a Greek scholar, but there's two words for time. One is just sort of how we measure time, seconds, but the other is significance. And I think for people who have survived great suffering or trauma, there's this chance of viewing time and viewing purpose and viewing life differently. We do savor moments, but we also, it's kind of like the soldier who comes back from war who's lost his or her buddy and then lives with more intentionality. One of the stats that really surprised me was one in four Americans claim to have a purpose in life, but three out of four cancer survivors can point to a purpose in their lives. So there's a radical clarification. You alluded to earlier with you and your husband. There's a radical clarification that occurs when we go through trauma. And it can be, not always, it can be really good in the sense of we know what we're about. I mean, it's called time span theory. I know I have a limited amount of time living now that I didn't think about before. And that means I make my days count in a way. It's different. It's just, it's more refined. I'm more resilient. I'm a tougher, grittier person than I ever was before.
Wow. How about your wife? I mean, walking through the fear, the trauma, and the caregiving, is she kind of in that same place with you, just going, we're going to cherish every moment?
Yeah, she's much more of a present moment person temperamentally. I've always been a future person. I always think about the next thing. I plan vacation 2 years out, right? So I'm kind of crazy. And so I've had to move much more in the moment. But one of the things about interviewing Mary for the book was I didn't realize that she felt, because of my system wasn't working, my immune system, she had to clean the apartment three times a day when we were at the cancer housing. And her statement to me, she teared up. She said, I feared that if I let one germ get through, I'd be responsible for your death. And she did three loads of laundry a day. So I think for her, she didn't exhale for, months. And just put on her game face. So my wife is a hero and carried me. And what's interesting about her, I think, we do cherish our time and our lives together now in a very new way. But she's just a rock. My wife is amazing.
I love that you have each other. And again, my sister who lost her husband through pancreatic cancer, which is another wretched cancer. I hate
wretched,
it so bad.
The worst. Yep.
And but she did the same thing. She had to do so much to keep him on track. And she suddenly was feeling like it was all on her. And that is such a subtle shift, but it's too much to bear. And I love what you said a few minutes ago about appropriate control is going, Lord, I'm not perfect. I'm doing my best here. Would you just fill in the gaps for me? I mean, that is an exhale prayer to me, because we can get so lost in the weeds when we think it is all up to us and that God is a punitive God and we miss a step, we're in, you know?
Well, I tell you, my wife was 11 and I was 12 when we met. So we have been in each other's lives for a long time. We're talking about a 41-year marriage. And thankfully, we didn't marry at 11 and 12.
That I was going to say.
no, we waited. If we waited a few years. But it has been a joy. I recently had an offer to go teach in another part of the world for a week. And she looked at me and she said, you know, this is not a season of solo adventures for you anymore.
Come on. Amen.
She's saying, you know, I want you while I got you, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, the treatments I had were harsh, and my life will be probably shortened some at the other end. I'm more susceptible to other things now. I'm living pretty healthy now, but my body is not the same it was before, and that's just a reality. So,
do you deal with any kind of...
Go ahead. one thing I want to say. So in writing this book, I with the chemo brain and my sense of loss of cognition, I didn't know if I could write the book, frankly. And I'd written an ethics book before when I was younger, but it was kind of a test and a challenge to see if I could write it. And it was wonderful to be. It was not only therapeutic in terms of the reflection, but it was also kind of a challenge. Can I do this? And it was very affirming to be able to do it.
And you did it well. It is an amazing book. We're going to pause here, but I want you to listen to this excerpt from the book by Alec Hill. Followers of Jesus are encouraged to construct spiritual houses on rock so that when the rains come, the streams rise and the winds blow and beat against us, we will not fall. Practicing spiritual disciplines is like digging a well. When crises hit, we're able to draw water for our soul's care. You know what? It's so good just as a way of life to walk intimately with God, to spend time with Him because He is who He is, but it does something for your soul and it shores you up when the storms come, and they do come. Talking to Alec Hill, his book is Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. We've got 6 copies. You can text the word book to get in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. On the other side, I want you to talk a bit about PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and lament. Some of the kind of the residual impact when you've walked through something that left you breathless. Maybe for you, friend, it's not sickness, but it's trauma, it's rejection. Your spouse walked away. You lost your house or a business or a child. These things are real on the other side of significant hardship, but God meets us there. I'll have Alec Hill address that on the other side. Again, text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute.
I'm waiting my whole life to hear you say, well done, my good and faithful one. Welcome to the place where you belong.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Middays. I'm Susie Larson talking to Alec Hill. His book is titled Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. Again, this book is bigger than even the cancer battle. It's so much about when we walk through the valley of the shadow, God is with us and He is for us. But true things, we have things to sort through that are real, like pain and hardship and what just happened to me. And you write about both lament and post-traumatic stress. Let's start with PTSD. In fact, I think your daughter was the one who suggested you look into that.
Yeah, well, after she was shot, she was classic PTSD. And for a year, she went through therapy in Chicago, and she came out the other side. So when I realized that sort of 6 months after the transplant, I was going through my own sort of dreams and remembering the treatments I'd been through and the friends I'd lost, she said, "Dad, you're experiencing PTSD." So my youngest daughter sort of proved my counselor on this.
Wow. And what was that like for you, walking through a process to sort it all through?
As I look back on it, mine was certainly mild compared to her, but it was very real. I'm an upbeat person, and I was sad. I was sad, and I found myself, like I say, reliving. And what I've learned about the science is the brain sort of holds the pain that we can't handle in the moment, and as we start getting better, it releases it so we can process it. But the hard thing about it, just when I was feeling better and stronger, I started having these flooding back memories of both my own pain and then the death and the suffering around me. And it plunged me, I think, for about 3 months, I'd say, into a mild depression. I think the big thing is to know it's real. Part of it's naming it, right? Once you name it, you can, and you know there's a pathway ahead. So I kind of came out more or less the other side. Although I still confess, when I go to funerals of friends, like I lost a friend to melanoma cancer recently, and I still got hit whacked. So there, it's not like PTSD, it goes away in its primary form, but there's a lingering effect, I think, that can be triggered by other events.
It is such a surprise. Our bodies, we are so fearfully and wonderfully made, and so many folks, when they've come through and they start to get better and they get hit, you know, that happened to me too in a different way, but I remember somebody saying, "You're finally better, and now you're dealing with this." Like, you know, is it always something with you? But it was really, I wasn't ready until my body got strong enough that I could face and sort through what had just happened. And it's so painful. But talk about lament and the importance of really entering in with God to sort through going, that hurt and that was hard. That was a loss. I feel like you have to do that if you really want to redeem the time in its fullest. Otherwise, you're carrying around these things you're not sorting through, and that's detrimental to the soul.
Well, you know, lament is something that the American church largely has lost, and 40% mm-hmm. of the Psalms are lament. We have a book called Lamentations, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. But lament is going to God with a raw, almost non-rational pain and screaming and yelling. And I like what one theologian said. He said, you know, it's almost okay to even utter things that are theologically unsound at the time, because God, and this is what's unique about our God, is he processes our pain with us. And of course, the cross is the great image of that. And so it's okay to be, if you will, a little unorthodox, but the whole thing is, it's a safe place where we can just roar and just cry. Mm-hmm. And lament is a beautiful thing. And it's not just meant to be done individually. And so in some cultures, lament is done. I had a friend who lost her husband, and her Caucasian friends sort of sent her notes and stuff, but her Cambodian friends rushed to the house, hugged her, sat with her all afternoon. And it's just, it was a very different cultural experience for her, but she was so thankful for her Cambodian friends.
Wow. Let's look at the other side. You know, who are you? Who were you pre-cancer? You were a man who loved his family and loved Jesus, but maybe give us even a better description, pre-cancer and post-cancer. How are you different?
Yeah, so again, I think I've talked about pre-cancer being kind of a take-the-hill kind of guy. I think post-cancer, you know, again, my body isn't what it was. Sometimes I wonder about my brain. I don't know how much that's just plain aging versus the cancer. But I am I'm a much kinder, softer, more empathetic person. Mm-hmm. I now, the center of my life focuses around mentoring the next generation. I've got 14, 15 people who I mentor monthly. And I'm surprised by this pastor's heart, if you will, that's developed
that's
in me. And and I like this person. I'm also a lot more candid than I used to be. I used to be such a diplomat and so afraid that I might offend people or they may not like me. And time's too short, you know. So
amen.
I'm not cruel or harsh or anything, but I just speak it. I'm just much more declarative. Yeah. And my wife looks at me sometimes, Mary, and she says, I really like this new you.
I love that. Well, what I hear is that you don't have the fear of man, which is a new level of freedom as well, when you start to realize your mortality and God's faithfulness. Let's talk about, you know, we want to avoid suffering at all costs, but you even write this. You said, troublingly, there is a tendency to relax spiritually when we're physically whole. We draw near to the Lord in a time of calamity, but we do slip back to a lukewarm status quo. And so many are afraid of suffering. Of course, no one wants to suffer. But speak to that, if you would, because we want comfortable. We want comfort. We want all of our ducks to line up. But those are the times we usually lose sight of how much we need him.
Well, I don't like the passages in Romans and James where they talk about how suffering is productive for our character and our souls, right? That we have to persevere, count it all joy. But, you know, there is something, some truth to this, that C.S. Lewis compared us to like a ball or a steel ball that and the field is tilted, that when we relax, the ball goes downhill. And so suffering is one of those things. I think spiritual disciplines on the positive side is a counter that we can do in our, you know, when we're healthy and well. But when we don't do that, the suffering kind of calls us back. And we see this in the Old Testament, right? Remember, remember, remember is a constant verb of what God tells his people. We can either remember voluntarily or it'll happen involuntarily, or it's probably mostly a combination of both. But I kind of laugh. I think, why didn't I have two cancers where 500 people in the world get each cancer? The odds of that are less than getting struck by lightning bolt. Well, I think it's just living in a fallen world. But clearly God is teaching me things through those. And I'm going, am I so hard-headed that I couldn't have learned those otherwise? I hope that's not the case.
I've asked the same question, but then I didn't want to stick around for the answer. No, I'm just kidding. I must need more refining than the average Joe, I guess. But I loved from your book. I love this and want you to expound on it. You said, if we hold on to the title of patient too long, even after we're safely on the road to recovery, our journey of wellness is delayed. That is a profound truth. Say more if you would.
This is a, I forget what university, it's a major university research study involving like hundreds of people. And it basically said there are three categories. So as you just read, if you hold on to the first one is victim. If you hold on to the victim title too long, all of your mental health, physical health, spiritual health, all of that declines. The second category is patient, which you are for a long time. And a lot of people are reluctant to give it up because they're almost superstitious that if I say I'm a survivor, which is the third category, that something bad's going to happen to them. But moving each of these three steps, moving out of patient to survivor, is an important step if indeed you are a survivor. Now, if you're still, you know, in it, then you can't go there artificially. But for me, the step to survivor at year two, or maybe even year three, was an important statement that cancer is part of the compost of my life. It's who I am, but it doesn't define me anymore. I think when you're a victim and a patient, the suffering defines you, and that's all basically all you can talk about. Whereas now, I talk about it, you know, what, 10, 20% of the time. It's who, it's part of who I am, but there are a lot of other parts of who I am as well.
And, you know, we talked about earlier about doing your best and leaving the rest. I mean, how about just lifestyle approach? I mean, your body's been pretty ravaged by chemo, radiation, and cancer. But what are just some things you do, Alec, to stay healthy, to do your part where you trust God to do his part?
So physically, I walk 90 minutes a day. First Wow. walk is with Mary, and the second walk is by myself in the afternoon. I now have 38 stretches that I do because the radiation dried out the cartilage in my joints. And so I went to a physical therapist and I went to a personal trainer. First time in my life with a physical trainer, I swear by it. I went 10 times. And now, wow. So I've got these. So if I do these exercises every other day, my body is pretty good. I don't get terribly sore. If I miss, like I did some traveling recently and I skipped them, all of a sudden I felt pain going down my neck and down my left arm to my elbow. And I went, well, I lapsed. So that's one thing. And I think spiritually, it's a sense of whatever spiritual disciplines you have in a habit of life. Again, sort of the same sort of thing, a routine, not a routine because that sounds negative, but a habit. I like the word habit better. And I find, and then relationally, you know, be in a community, be in a church, be accountable. All of those sort of health things that we do are important and to live a good life.
Hmm.
Oh, and the fourth thing I should mention is, first thing I should mention is mission. We need a purpose in life. And if we have a mission or purpose, and that varies, it's different for different people, but that'll get us up in the morning, keep us going, keep the adrenaline flowing.
Mm-hmm. And you switched from, you know, you were president of InterVarsity, and now you're president emeritus and mentoring. The overall mission in your life, though, it sounds like, is to live present with God, present with those you love, invest in the next generation while you're smelling the flowers. Is there any more you would add to that?
No, you should write the book. That's a simple right there.
Very good.
Good summary.
Thank you. I read the book. Well, tell me this. What do you know about God that you didn't know before all of this?
I knew he was my loving father. I grew up without a dad. I knew that he cared for me and that he was holy. What do I know now? I think he's a tad more mysterious. I don't have him in his box. He's a little bit more like Aslan, a little wilder than I thought. He's more creative than I thought. Less formulaic than I thought. He's a wonder to me. And I think it makes me forward when I think about heaven. I think a lot more about that and being with him. And I'm excited about that. I'm a lot less presumptuous about sort of him being my chum and he's God and I'm not. At the same time, I feel a closeness that, again, this paradox of he's more transcendent, but he's more immanent. And I don't even know how to explain that.
That's good. That's so good. Alec, I just have loved this conversation, and I pray with all my heart that you do live out your days in health. Thank you for the way that you stewarded your story and for giving us your time today. We sure appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Susie. It's been a pleasure.
Great conversation. Alec Hill, friends, his book, Living in Bonus Time, Surviving Cancer, Finding New Purpose. Text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Middays with Susie Larson. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player, and never miss a show.